Great to be back with you again for another edition of the News on Drinks Adventures. And we'll actually start off with some personal news. I want to let you know about my new job as Media and Communications Manager at Spirits and Cocktails Australia, the industry association that represents the major distilleries operating in this country. So I just wanted to be transparent about my new role in the industry for those of you who haven't already seen it on LinkedIn or elsewhere. I've published the media release on the Drinks Adventures homepage, drinksadventures.com.au. As for the podcast, not much changes. I'll be continuing to produce it with the blessing of my new employer, which is a brilliant outcome. In saying that, though, this will be the last episode of Season 16. I'm just going to take a short break to catch up on some of the back-of-house stuff so we can start anew in a few weeks' time. So, on to the other news. Chris Malcolm slams Mighty Craft failures. Morris releases Tokay Barrel Whiskey. And introducing The Beer Drinker's Toolkit, a new book by Mick Woost. ASX-listed craft beverages company Mighty Craft has reported a $6 million loss for the 2023 financial year. In its annual results webinar, current chair Chris Malcolm, Mighty Craft's second biggest shareholder with an almost 6% stake, slammed the company's previous board and directors for what he says were a litany of poor investments and business decisions.
Investments into things like Ballistic, Source, Spark, the establishment of Mighty Mooney, the taking on of the Jetty Road lawn site that remains empty, the engagement of Catalyst, Mark Haseman and Lahini Haseman's consulting company, the purchase of Momentum Wine as an export business from John Hood were not the best of decisions. We have an extremely large cost base that has been built at head office and is simply unsustainable. Just to make it very simple, to put in perspective what things we need to do, if you consider last financial year, we had a 48% increase in sales, and yet we can't make a profit, shows you how high our cost base is.
Acting CEO Jess Lyon said the company's revenue performance for the year was particularly impressive given the current market conditions.
The market in general for beverages remains healthy. Alcohol is a defensive category and does hold up well in tough times. Having said that, the second half of 23 for us was tough, as it was for most of the alcohol market. Inflationary impacts did curtail consumer spend in the premium end of the market, and there was definitely a softening in the craft beer segment. Craft beer declined 5.3% in 23 after a period of double-digit growth. Gin, of course, also took a bit of a hit with a category decline of 7%. But in respect to Mighty Craft's performance, the headline is that we still grew in a challenging environment. In fact, we grew 48% on the prior year, which was all organic growth, which we think is a pretty great result. However, despite the growth, it became clear, as Chris has just outlined, that we needed to change and we needed to address the balance sheet.
Mighty Craft is targeting $25 to $45 million in divestments, which Malcolm said will be informed by a strategic review that identified two distinct divisions within the company.
One is a beer line that we've invested in, and the other one is ostensibly spirits. Now, when you think about these two businesses, they have very, very different rhythms to the business, whether that be production, maturation time, or the cash flow behind those businesses are all quite different. The personnel that manage those businesses are very different at the sales end and also the production end. And so we've tried to streamline the two. And what we have said is that there's an opportunity for us to sell some of those assets, whether it be beer or whether it be spirits. Once some of these significant assets are sold, we will be able to reduce our debt quite materially, and that is the goal in the short to medium term. Longer term is an opportunity to build a sustainable business, depending on the divestitures as we go.
Acting CEO Jess Lyon updated investors on divestments already in progress, like the proposed sale of Jetty Road Brewing.
We did announce to the market we have a binding sale agreement for that. It's around the $3 million mark. It's not completed yet. There's obviously liquor licence and a couple of other conditions, but we expect that to be in the next 8 weeks. In terms of Foghorn, we are in discussions with a number of interested parties. We obviously also announced to the market that that is one asset that we're looking to divest. So we don't have any update on that at the moment, but expect to have an update in the coming weeks. I did mention a bit earlier, one other asset that we have had inbound interest in is Hill's Cider.
She said juggernaut brand Better Beer is targeting volume of 17 million litres in FY 2024, with a multitude of new spirits products also in the pipeline.
For 78 Degrees, we'll capitalise on recent ranging gains for Australian whiskey, and there is definitely more whiskey maturing for 78. We will also capitalise on 78's positioning at the value end of town for gin to address the short-term trend away from super premium. For 78, we also have an exciting new innovation in whiskey and ready-to-drink expected to come to market in the second half of 24, so look out for that one. For Seven Seasons, we will be doubling down on Green Ant Gin, which we believe is the most unique Australian gin on the market and will have really good export appeal in due course. Of course, we will also eagerly await the release of Seven Seasons' first-of-its-kind Indigenous whiskey. That's a bit of a secret at the end of 24, early 25. For Kangaroo Island, we have Australia's first release of our fully island-grown and created gin with 100% juniper sourced from our KI garden to be released in September. It's KI's first harvest gin, which is very exciting. For KI, we will continue to focus on maturing whisky stocks for single malt KI market release, probably in early 25. We also now have an exclusive sales and distribution agreement with Mount Uncle for both agave and rum in far north Queensland, which we're very excited about, and we believe that both these categories will follow the example in the US. IWSR expects whisky, agave and rum to be the fastest growing categories in the next 5 years, and we intend to capitalise on that.
Mighty Craft Acting CEO Jess Lyon speaking there. Morris of Rutherglen has announced the latest addition to its core range of single malt whiskies, Morris Tokay Barrel. Mike Sargent, Head of Strategy and Innovation at Copper and Grain Distilling, says it's the logical complement to Morris's existing portfolio of whiskies, finished in musket and sherry casks.
Yeah, look, the idea came around a few years back around looking at the Tokay liquid and the Tokay barrels that we have at Morris and Rutherglen to finish some of our single malt in, and we've been really successful with the musket. So, look, yeah, it's a really unique flavour profile, light, fresh fruits and a bit more delicate and dessert notes than, say, the intense richness of musket. Yeah, so we launched over a year ago with the Whiskey Club. It was in our inaugural release and it went down really, really well. So it was voted by all the club members at the Whiskey Club as their favourite Australian whiskey that year, and we really couldn't resist re-releasing it to the public. So after 12 months or so, our distiller Darren had another crack at it and tweaked a few little elements with the whiskey, but it's predominantly very similar from the inaugural release. But yeah, it's available national now, and we've had a very happy bunch of whiskey drinkers who have really been asking for it for a long time.
And how significant is the Topaque in the Morris barrel inventory? Like, how much of those barrels were there available to work with?
I think Tokay has flown under the radar quite a lot. Not that many people outside the wine industry or who know too much about fortified wine have heard about it, but we have been selling Tokay for a very long time. It's you know, we have national listings in some of the big nationals for our wines, as well as Morris, and we sell a small proportion overseas. And a lot of our Tokay we sell direct to consumers for our very healthy wine club as well. So it is nowhere near the size of port and musket, but that definitely it's there with a Apera or sherry in terms of our scale. One thing that we have done over the last couple of years is really pulled back on the table wine and focused in production on fortified wine. So over the last probably 7 or 8 years, we've actually really upped our production of fortifieds, knowing that we need these barrels for our future whiskey production. So it is probably our third biggest fortified product that comes out of the winery.
And anything sort of different, you know, in the way that Darren had to put this together versus the other ones in terms of the dealing with these slightly different barrel characters?
with our Tokay, our recent release, slightly different from our first release with the Whiskey Club, with predominantly more French oak. We felt that a little bit more spicy flavour notes that actually complemented the Tokay wine notes. And we also paired back the char of the barrels. We have a slightly higher char in our musket finish because the intensity of the musket flavours can really, it matches that level of char. We felt that the Tokay grape and the wine from the Tokay barrels was a bit more delicate, so we pulled back the char and we predominantly focused in on French oak. So slight tweaks, but predominantly very similar to our first release, and we do treat our barrel selection quite differently than Muscat, or if we do a port or a sherry as well. They're just very different flavour profiles that we're dealing with.
And, you know, what's been the response generally to the Morris brand and the different products that you've got now in the core range? Because it's quite a formidable core range that you've got now.
Yeah, look, I think we've kind of almost tapped out what our core range wants to be. And it's always been the plan to really focus in on what we're good at. So Muscat, Port, Sherry, Topaque or Tokay, that's going to be our core range from here on until forever, I guess. We will do limited editions, aged products, maybe find some special barrels. But for us as a brand, it makes sense to focus in on our core offer, and we make amazing fortified wines, you know, those fortified wines I mentioned. That will be the real core focus of the business ongoing. And we will, as I said, we're doing limited editions and special, you know, kind of single barrel things coming up. But I don't see us venturing too far away from fortified wine. That is right in our wheelhouse, and that's our strength, and that's what we really want to double down on.
And port is in the core range now, is it as well? Because I wasn't aware that was...
Oh, no. I probably jumped the gun there. So we actually we have released a port as an add-in with the Whiskey Club, our friends at the Whiskey Club, this month, actually. So if anyone's a member, they can check that out. A very small release, but it's a really nice way to dip our toe in the water and get some feedback before we go national before we bring something into the core range. But look, I dare say that in the not-too-distant future, we'll have port within that core range. It's a great way to get some feedback of some very energetic and knowledgeable consumers by releasing, you know, something to market first and then tinkering with it and then going back again with something a little bit different.
Co-partnership is different from other agencies purely because we specialise in drinks.
Co-partnership is a strategic branding and packaging design agency founded by Max Harkness and Zoe Green in 2011.
We're not just designers who happen to be specialising in drinks. We're already ahead on trends in market, consumer behaviours, understanding how drinks are made, understanding the nuances of every category.
Even if you don't know the name Co-partnership, you're familiar with their work on great brands that have featured on this podcast, like Morris, St Hugo, Kate Byron and Mr. Black.
Drinks design, we believe it really does require specialisation. There's some pretty technical things that happen throughout the process of really understanding how things are made and printed and which suppliers you need to go to get things done.
Co-partnership, a proud supporter of the Drinks Adventures podcast.
Branding and packaging, it's 50% of your success, really. I think it's going to be as important as the drink itself. If you get both the branding and the product right, then that's what's going to set you up for growth and momentum.
Visit co-partnership.com to get in touch with the team.
You and I have spoken previously about your decision to go with the traditional Australian naming conventions of port, Tokay, sherry, but we haven't talked about it on the podcast. Are you kind of confident that was the right avenue to pursue in the light of having released sherry, I suppose, and seeing what the reaction was to that?
Yeah, look, I think there's two schools of thought here and they can be both right. The naming conventions for Australian wine, Topaque, Apera and Tawny, while they do provide a real point of difference to other products, international products, our bigger plan or our bigger goal is to take Australian whiskey to the world. And we want to make sure that we can do that with naming conventions that will attract consumers. So selling a Topaque or a Tawny or an Apera is going to be a bit more of a challenge for us than a Tokay port and a sherry. So while it might make sense for that in Australia, for us, we see the globe as our market and we want to make sure that we can make Australian whiskey successfully globally. So we want to give our best chance of success. I think, locally, we play in whiskey, so we don't play in wine for our whiskey. Those names are associated with the wines. You know, our whiskey is whiskey. So I think we've taken the route that best serves our long-term strategic plans. Yeah, there's no turning back now.
And how unique is Tokay finished whiskey globally? It's not a barrel program that you really hear much about generally.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I mean, obviously sherry cask is probably the number one that's globally known, and port cask as well. I guess Muscat was our lead because Muscat is really the home of Muscat, particularly in Australia's Rutherglen, and that's really in our wheelhouse. That is what we're known for. So when we take Muscat globally, people go, oh, you know, Muscat, but you know, that's really cool. We don't see much of that. And kind of likewise for Tokay, even in international markets and some European markets, if people are not familiar with the wine, generally they've never heard of it before. So, look, I think it's a really great differentiator for us. And it's got a great flavour as well. It's really nice balance and really luscious flavours as well. So it's not the intensity of the ports or the sweetness of the sherries. It's got this really nice dessert flavours and smoothness to it. So I think it's going to be a winner when people actually get to try it.
Brisbane-based beer writer Mick Woost has released his debut book, The Beer Drinker's Toolkit. It's the ultimate visual guide to learning everything you need to know about beer, including its history, the ingredients and production process, beer styles, serving skills, food pairings, and much more. I asked Mick how it came to fruition.
Right, so a publisher actually contacted me. They were looking for someone to write a book about beer. And I wasn't available at the time, and I wasn't quite available for the book they were looking for. They were looking for a kind of a history of Australian beer. But then they kind of really liked my writing, and so they wanted me to do something. They just weren't sure exactly what. And so I pitched this idea of a book that, yeah, kind of was educational to the way that, you know, it doesn't bog you down with details, but it tells you all about beer, but it's conversational. But it's easier to read because that's the sort of thing I like. I've got a short attention span. So, yeah, I kind of pitched this idea and put together sort of the contents of it, and they loved it.
And did you kind of, you know, review like what was already out there and kind of think about, and not that there's been a huge number of beer books that have come out really, but, you know, was that sort of part of it, looking at what's kind of come before, both in Australia and overseas as well?
Yeah, so I had a good look as I could, and I kind of felt like what I wrote seems so obvious to me that I kind of thought there must be other people have done this already and probably better. And I looked, and so much of what is out there is great if you, you know, want to study to become a brewer, or if you, you know, you want to learn all the technical stuff because you're home brewing or something. But so much of it just felt like homework, or just felt like, yeah, you're getting weighed down with jargon, and some of it was actually just quite boring. So I thought, well, beer's fun. I think reading about beer should be fun, learning about it should be fun. And so something that was just kind of, you know, bite-sized sections, easy to read, a bit silly, you know, you laugh and chuckle at some of the dumbness in there, as well as learning stuff across the spectrum. Yeah, I couldn't really find anything out there that really fit the bill. I mean, like, in a sense, the way I wrote it, I was aiming as close as possible for timeless or timeless-ish and placeless-ish. Like, I wasn't just writing a book about Australian beer, and I wasn't just writing a book of all the newest stuff. But yeah, I have hit on sours, which obviously the last 5 or 10 years have really been in the spotlight, hazy IPAs and kind of what people, what brewers have been doing with hops in them. I touch on pastry stouts briefly because, again, that's pastry beers, I should say, because for the last few years they've been coming right up, and as you said, non-alcoholic beers. And look, some of that I'm sure will date a little bit, but I did just want to show people the breadth of beer, which of course includes some of the stuff that's big now, without making it, you know, the book of 2023 that needs to be updated in 2 years when a new style's, you know, hot and sexy.
And there's not many, you haven't sort of included examples of each style so much, I don't
Correct.
Think. And is that for that same reason of currency? You know, like when you do look back, you know, some of the beer books that got published 10, 15 years ago, it's kind of, yeah, it's a bit of a time capsule, isn't it, of breweries that don't exist anymore and that kind of thing?
Absolutely. And like at the time, they were amazing. And the thing is, the beer scene actually just moved a lot slower back then. So I think people kind of felt like this, they would last a bit longer. But it just, it's speeding up exponentially, right? It's insane. And yeah, you're right, breweries and beers that go off the market. I mean, it can be interesting to look back at them as a, like I said, a time capsule sort of thing. But for the most part, it doesn't feel relevant, knowing there's so many beers out there that you could actually be drinking. I purposely didn't talk about real-life breweries and beers throughout it. I think I name-dropped one drop, milkshake, pancake, custard, hazy IPA. I can't even remember. It's about 10 words. I name-dropped that one as an example of, you know, breweries that are willing to make fun of themselves with their ridiculous beers. But other than that, yeah, I just kind of stuck more to the styles and kinds of beer and left it to people to go find the examples they want to taste.
And who do you see as being the typical audience for this book?
I think it can go a couple of ways. Obviously, people who don't know much about beer, this is, I think, perfect for, and I think I've kind of written it so that you don't have to have any prerequisite knowledge. You don't need to know the buzzwords. You don't need to know what dry hopping is. You don't need to know, you know, what makes a Pilsner a Pilsner to read this book. So it kind of is for, as long as you've got a bit of interest in beer, this is a great way to learn and to get into the world for the first time or to deepen your knowledge a bit. But I also, like, as someone who, like I said, I just enjoy reading about beer, but I also want things to be fun and light. I did kind of write it for people who were already down the rabbit hole. And, you know, my friend Will at Crafty Pint, he kind of read it and he said, yeah, oh, yeah, there was actually some stuff in there about how you taste beer that I'd never really thought about before, the, you know, working through all five senses and some of the ways that I, yeah, just approach beer from a different angle. So someone there who already knows plenty about beer, he found that really interesting and new and fresh for him. So I've kind of got, you know, brewers and bartenders and things in mind as a way to have a conversation about beer. Maybe, you know, it's not there to start them from scratch. It's just there to be, you know, a chat in a pub.
One of the things that kind of bothers me about the beer scene these days is just sort of, you know, you've got all these wonderful styles that you've covered in this book and kind of how few of those can be very readily accessed. Is that something that you would agree with?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can't speak too much for, you know, in different countries. In Australia, that's definitely true. But, you know, I think most of these, if you wanted to dig, you could find something somewhere. Like, maybe that's not true of some of the international styles so much. You might not always be able to find a smoked beer or a Schwarzbier or, a, you know, some of these Belgian styles. But, yeah, if you go into a craft brewery and you see they've made an interesting kind of German lager you hadn't heard of before, or, yeah, like you said, a specialist bottle shop will usually have sections with some interesting and different stuff from around the country. I think a lot of these, even if you can't readily find them all the time, if you're someone who goes to breweries and bottle shops at least semi-regularly, you'll spot a lot of them. And so this way, I suppose, you've got some kind of reference. You know, you could just flip it open or even, you know, a scavenger hunt. You know, people who played Pokemon always had ones that they could find easily and ones that were a bit harder to chase down. I guess it's the same with beer.
Mate, the most important question, where can people find it?
It's in all kinds of stores around the country. It's in things like, you know, your Big W and your Kmart and Target, but also you can find it online. I mean, if you Google Beer Drinkers Toolkit, a whole bunch of shops come up. You can find my website and buy it directly from me and get a signed copy. Yeah, it's not too hidden. It's around.
Mick Wuss speaking there, author of the Beer Drinkers Toolkit. That's all for this edition. Take care, and I'll be back with you very soon for Season 17 of the Drinks Adventures podcast.